All right, our agenda is here. On the agenda today, we have to review the credential CG use cases document. Again, remember, this is a very drafty, very, very preliminary document, but we want to get some kind of agreement on it so that we can present it at W3C TPAC. We also need to do a call to vote on the document. We're going to have a very short call, you know, a short vote on that document. 7 days, I think, is the minimum that we can do per the charter. And we also need to start discussing our roadmap document. That's basically what the how we plan to complete the work that we're doing. There are two other things that we may want to do to talk about today, and one of those is the W3C TPAC allocation of time. So we've got three slots at TPAC that we are going to be presenting in. By we, I mean the credentials CG. So we just want to make sure that our presentation material and what we're going to present on has been approved by the community before we go and present that in 2 weeks. So I think that's the only addition to the agenda I have. Are there any other updates or changes to the agenda? Anything anyone else wants to add? Okay, if there isn't, let's go ahead and get started. Let's cover TPAC first. There's going to be an announcement made tomorrow about the TPAC agenda for the Web Payments Group. Credentials, the Credential CG has been allocated an hour in the morning on Monday to talk about the work we're doing here. And that can be, you know, the web payment stuff is supposed to be focused primarily on payments, but in that 1 hour that the CG is talking, we can talk about the applicability of credentials to other things like education and healthcare and professional licensing and things of that nature. So what we're looking for are a couple of volunteers from this group to maybe spend 5 to 10 minutes to talk about why, you know, credentials are important outside of payments and the business case that your organization has. So basically the first thing, I guess, is are there any volunteers? Does anyone here want to take 5 to 10 minutes to talk about web payments, about credentials during W3C TPAC?
Manu, this is Bill Gebhardt. I'd be pleased to present 5-10 minutes from an education management perspective.
Brilliant. That'll be great. And in fact, I think we might open with that so that, you know, everyone can see that there are large organizations that care about this this space pretty deeply. So we can talk about the details offline.
Sure.
But I think the expectation, Bill, is that, you know, we'll try and create a rough framework for the hour, and then, you know, whatever you want to do in the 10 minutes towards the beginning of it is up to you. But we can talk about the details later.
Sure. Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Bill.
Martin, this is Mary Bold speaking.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to suggest that we also reserve 5 minutes from an accredit trust. That could be Eric Korb, or it could be me, or it could be us jointly. And frankly, what we'd want to do is kind of help be a rounding out so that whether that's after Bill or three speakers after Bill, so that we can kind of round out some issues based on what other people are saying. So if there's a little bit of coordination here or offline, we would love to be able to be one of those 5-minute speakers.
Okay, great. Sunny, Chris, is there any kind of prepared statement that you'd want us to do on behalf of Badge Alliance? Like, I mean, you could, for example, you could record like a 5-minute blurb on Badge Alliance and why Badge Alliance is looking at, you know, credentials and badging and that kind of stuff. Would you have anything prepared we could show the audience, or would you want to prepare something that we could show the audience?
Hi, Leonard. This is Sunny. Can you hear me?
Yep. Yep.
You know what? Let us talk about what we can do, and then can we get back to you on that?
Yeah, absolutely.
It'll just
yeah.
be, since Chris and I can't be, either of us can be present, so you're saying maybe we can do some type of recording in advance and send it over to you.
Okay, great. And they have really good AV facilities there, so it's not going to be a problem to put the recording up on a big projector and show the audience.
Cool.
Okay.
Let me get back to you on that.
Okay, great. Thanks. So that's on the Monday. We have an hour slot to talk about credentials outside of payments, and then we have to dovetail the conversation into payments. So I might end up doing that towards the end because I'm also doing the presentation for the web payments community group. So it's going to be web payments first, and then we're going to talk about credentials and then try and dovetail the credentials back into the payments discussion. So that's Monday. On Tuesday, we have a dedicated slot for the Credential CG to meet face-to-face and talk with the other W3C members that want to participate in that discussion. And that's going to be from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. on Tuesday. And we're currently trying to wrangle rooms, but that shouldn't be an issue. We should be able to get the room, no problem. And then on Wednesday, there's going to be like a 10,000-foot overview of credentials for the W3C members that could not be there Monday or Tuesday for a variety of different reasons. A lot of these organizations have multiple meetings that they have to be, they have, technical working group commitments that they've made that they have to be there. So some of these people may not be able to make it Monday, Tuesday. So for those folks, we want to give them a 10,000-foot overview of what's going on in both, payments, that's going to be one session, and then credentials, which is going to be another session. So that's Wednesday. No idea what the time is because it's run as an unconference. So we won't know the room or the time until the day of that meeting. So that's good. Like we've got a healthy amount of time to spend face to face at TPAC. We've got slots allocated, and we have rooms allocated, or one of them is. We're still waiting on one of them, but that should be finalized by the end of this week. Any questions about TPAC or what we should be doing in each one of those slots? Okay, if there are no questions, I think what the next step, is going to be putting a slide deck together that's going to be presented at TPAC, and we will work on that in the next week or two to finalize it before we all meet at TPAC. Okay, anything else on TPAC before we move on? Okay. Let's see. Next up is the credentials community group use case review. We've taken what this group has been talking about over the past 4 weeks, including all the use case review, all of the rewrites, all of the what-if scenarios, and put all of that together in this document, which is the proposed use case document for this group. Again, this is a draft. We expect it to change. We expect use cases to be added. A couple of use cases may be dropped, depending on how the discussion goes over the next couple of months. And certainly, we will be putting more detail into all of the use cases. But in general, the document is split into three main parts. The first part of the document is the glossary. It's just the terminology that we're using. Again, this stuff is not set in stone, but it's terminology like what's the definition of entity, what's the definition of credential, what's the definition of an issuer, things of that nature. The next section of the document has to do with overall design criteria. The design criteria are specifically not use cases, but it's functionality that we want to make sure we support at some time. So maybe it's not in the first version, but we shouldn't do anything in the first version to prevent these things from being possible. For example, let's look at data portability. So the idea here is that people should be able to move their credentials easily from one location on the web to another. And so we shouldn't do anything to make it difficult to move a credential from one system to another. So for example, tying it to a system-specific URL that makes the credential invalid if you move it away from that system would be an example of us not meeting the design requirement for data portability. So at a high level, any questions about what we're trying to do with the design requirement? Sorry, the design criteria? Is it clear or is it so foggy that it's hard to say anything about it?
Hey, Minter, this is Bill. I think the approach that we're taking is general in nature that is going to evolve to be quite specific over time to address some of the specific challenges that we have. I don't know that we can do it any differently.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Anyone else feel the same or differently? Any objections to the general way we're doing this?
This is Mark. I agree with Bill's comment.
Okay. Okay. Having been through this for the last 6 months in the web payments CG and with use cases through other working groups in the past, this approach tends to result in fairly useful use cases, meaning that we can look back at the use cases and figure out whether or not we're overstepping our bounds. So I do want to point out that the design criteria is a new thing we're trying, but the reason we're doing it is because there are some use cases that just don't fit neatly into a use case category, and we want to have a place where we're saying, look, we did think about this when we were putting the use cases together. We didn't think it should go in the use cases, but we definitely don't want to prevent this feature from happening in the future. So the design criteria tend to be a little more touchy-feely than the use cases. Okay, if there isn't anything else on the design criteria, we can move into the use cases. Does anyone want to say anything specific about the? Let me pull up one use case specifically, or one design criteria. So let's look at the data portability one. So it starts off with a very generic summary of what we're talking about. So data portability is about ensuring credentials may be easily moved from one credential service to another. So very simple statement. People that are not familiar with the work that we're doing here should be able to read the summary and understand what's going on. And for whatever reason, if they can't do that, there's an example that follows. And what we're hoping to do is have as many examples as possible to show people the different ways that the design criteria, the use case, can manifest itself. So, for example, the first example is Giannis has been storing all of his credentials at his college credential service and upon graduating would like to move them to another more long-term storage service. All of the credentials are moved without having to reissue or reassign any of the credentials. So hopefully at this point it's fairly obvious what the data portability design criteria is about. Does anyone feel that that's not the case? Okay, so that's the general approach we're taking for just about all of these things. It's someone that's unfamiliar with our work should be able to read it and understand what's going on. And it should be specific enough such that once we really get into the technical details, it becomes clear whether or not something is in scope or out of scope for what we're working on. Okay. The next let me go through the high level ones here. So we have data portability down there, the ability to move credentials from one service provider to another. We've got data rights in there, which basically says we should be able to annotate credentials that are sent out to say that they're only to be used for specific things. Again, we don't quite know how we're going to achieve that or if we're going to be able to achieve that in version 1.0, but we do want to keep it in mind. Legacy support has to do with making sure that we can integrate with older credentialing systems, like, for example, using email addresses to log in or using username-password combinations to log in. We need to think about that because the one thing that we can't do is just assume that the entire web is going to adopt the credential specifications and use it for login, right? So we have to think about how this integrates with OpenID Connect and how it integrates with, you know, Facebook Connect and Google Plus login and IMS's login mechanisms. Basically, we have to think about the problem more holistically. So that's what the legacy support design criteria is about. Section 4.4 is about flexible access control, so making sure that access to credentials can be provided in both an interactive manner, where the credentialee is a part of the transaction, and in a non-interactive manner, where the credentialee perhaps pre-authorizes access to a credential. For example, I authorize this hospital to retrieve my emergency contact information at any time, and then the hospital can pull that as they need to get the latest emergency contact information for that particular person. So being able to do access control in more than one way is important. And then, of course, Section 4.5 is about reusing and extending existing technologies like Facebook Connect or OpenID Connect or Google Plus where we can, and only inventing new stuff when it's absolutely necessary, when we can't avoid it. And then Section 4.6 is about identifier alignment. So this is something that came from Nate Otto. And the identifier alignment stuff is about making sure that two systems that have almost nothing to do with each other can align user accounts on both systems based on a shared identifier. Like, for example, a last name coupled with a date of birth or a social security number or some piece of information. Where they don't necessarily want to jump over and start using, the URLs as the identifier. We're going to have those as kind of the universal identifier for a lot of these credentials, but maybe there are legacy systems that just don't want to pull that complexity into their systems, and so we have to think about how these systems work with this new mechanism to try and align database records and user accounts. So in general, those are the high level design criteria that we have. Those are the kind of somewhat vague goals that we have for version 1.0, and there are certainly things that we don't want to prevent from happening. Any comments or questions on the design criteria as we have them right now? Does anyone feel uncomfortable with what we have in the document at this point? Or did we miss anything? Okay. If not, no, we'll really go ahead.
Looks like a good framework. Yeah.
Okay. And then we'll certainly add things as they come up. But nobody feels uncomfortable with going in front of the W3C membership and saying these are the things that we think are important, at least from a design criteria standpoint. Okay. Okay, then let's jump down to the use cases then. Let me get the link there. So links in IRC. We have a number of use cases. So the use cases are different from the design criterion, that the use cases point out a general use case that we want to support, and then they use examples to give you ways that use case, that generic use case, can manifest itself in the education space or financial space or healthcare space. So the verifiable claims use case, the first one up, is a good example to look at. So we're looking at this one here. So I'm just going to go down through the verifiable claims use case to give an example of the way it's laid out. Verifiable claims, a requester cryptographically verifies that an issuer has made a particular set of claims about an entity. A claim would consist of an assertion about a particular qualification, achievement, or attribute of the entity. So if you'll notice, there are words there that are underlined. Those are specific definitions. That's terminology that we use within this document, and if you click on the underlined word, it takes you to the definition. We try very, very hard to be very accurate in the terminology that we're using, such that there can be no confusion about what we mean by requester or issuer or entity. If you'll also note, the introduction is very generic. It's very general, so it can be confusing to read it. Someone reading it for the first time might have a lot of questions. And so what the examples below there, what they're meant to do is to try and give the person more specific examples of how this use case manifests itself. So, for example, in the first example, a university would like to verify that an incoming student has achieved an acceptable score on the SAT by verifying their score report with Educational Testing Service, ETS. Right? Second one, a bank would like to perform Know Your Customer clearing on a new customer by checking to see that they're a citizen of Finland and that they have a current national ID card issued to them by their government. Third example, a hospital would like to ensure that a prospective employee is licensed to practice medicine in their state, as well as having up-to-date certificates related to areas of their specialization. So that at a high level should give people a fairly decent idea of what the use case is about, reading the first two sections. The rest of it are further specific. So, for example, the details will outline, things that may not be apparent from the use case or the examples, reasons behind us having the use case, things of that nature. So, for example, in the details section for the verifiable claims use case, we have, this is the base use case for the credentials work, right, which we agreed to on the call last week. It establishes a need for a way to make claims about an entity and a way to cryptographically verify that the claims were made by a particular issuer. This is basically the detail is saying this is the fundamental reason that the credentials work exists. And then the role section kind of outlines which roles are involved in the use case. So we've got an issuer, a requester, and a credentialee associated. It's not clear whether or not we're going to continue to want to have the roles in there. It's questionable how much benefit that section has. And then the requirements are requirements that any technical specification is going to have to meet to meet the use case. So, for example, and unfortunately I didn't have time to write in any requirement here, but it would be something like a technical solution, a specification must provide a cryptographic means for verifying a set of claims, right? So that would be one. Another one would be, a ID mechanism must exist that uniquely identifies the requester and the credentialee, right? That would be another requirement. Okay, so that's an example of a use case and the approach that we're taking for the use cases. Any questions or comments? Is something not clear about this, or is there like, you know, comments on should we have roles, or is the requirements section helpful, things of that nature. Are there any sections in here that we should have that we don't have?
Chris has a general question in IRC. He says, is this how all working group or community groups lay out use cases?
No. Yes and no. It's completely up to the CG and the working group. Everyone does it differently. Some working groups have a whole bunch of pictures about what they want to see happen on the screen. Other groups have more technical, like mathematical proofs. It depends on the level of the work. Like if you're doing protocol work, it's a very different set. The use cases look very different from, for example, the web apps and browser-based work where you want to, let's say, if you wanted to have a trusted UI, you would show what that trusted UI would look like. So it's really dependent on the group. W3C actually has a, you know, from the beginning of W3C up to about 4 years ago, it had a fairly bad track record of defining use cases before they started technical work, and that led to kind of endless working groups because you never really knew when the work was done because you didn't have use cases to look back to and say, oh, we've achieved all of our use cases. So everyone does it fairly differently. The real question is, do we feel that once the technology is done, we can, or once we've, you know, created a certain set of technology, that we can look back to the use cases and say definitively whether or not we've achieved the goal of addressing the use cases? That's typically what a technical working group is supposed to do. So does anyone here feel that, you know, with these use cases and the examples and the requirements, that if we do technical work, we'll be able to know when to stop, if that makes sense? Does that question make sense? And then, Chris, I don't know if that actually answered your question or not.
Yeah, this is Mary speaking. Chris, can you give us some guidance about some other approaches that you know of, or are you concerned about a gap appearing in this approach? Poor Chris, he's having to write too. I know that feeling.
Hey, sorry, I'm having some trouble talking today, but I can for a second. So, no, I don't have... I actually like the approach. It was just more like me understanding how the W3C works and whether or not this is a standard way of doing it. I mean, my only thing is, you know, just from a development perspective, the idea of, it sounds like these aren't set in stone. Like as we move along, we can continue to adjust them, and that we're not entering into a contract, so we have flexibility to change it as we go. And as long as that's the case, then I think this is a great approach.
Yeah, certainly we're not entering into a contract. We can change things. I mean, you know, technical working groups, W3C has kind of a dual requirement of technical working groups. The first one is to make sure that they, you know, feed the technical working groups the right information to make sure that they're successful, so to set them up for success. The other thing that W3C and their membership needs to do is that if a technical working group starts going off the rails, they need to kill the technical working group, and they have to know when it starts going off the rails, or they have to recharter the group. The use cases also flow into requirements around intellectual property and the way the W3C makes sure that we have good IP protections in place for the technical work. And by IP protections, I mean they have to ensure that any W3C member that has any patents in the area that we're working in releases those to the community for the use in the spec, or says that they're not going to do that so that the technical working group can find another approach to solving their problem. So the use case is kind of, it's the first heads up to the lawyers that there's another reason the use cases exist. It's the first heads up to the lawyers so that they understand the scope of the work, so that they can say, yes, we need to pull in X, Y, and Z from we need to pull in these managers from these groups because they have patents that apply to this work, and we need to make sure that we start having that discussion now, sooner than later. So the use cases document it's certainly not a contract, and certainly nothing is set in stone, but it's more of a an assertion by the group to say this is what we intend to work on. So if there are any patent issues, or if the membership is not doesn't feel comfortable with it, let us know. Right? It's also a good document so that all of us on the call are on the same page as far as what we think we're going to be working on. Okay, thumbs up from Chris. Any other comments on the general approach to the use cases document or the purpose of it? Okay, if not, I'm going to quickly go through the use cases, and feel free to interrupt at any point if you think we're missing something or if you think something ended up in the document that we didn't agree to on the call last week or on the previous week's calls. So we've already gone over verifiable claims, so this is the ability for you to cryptographically verify that somebody said something. Storage is the next one, so the ability to store a credential and the ability for a requester to request that credential is a use case that we want to make sure is covered. And in fact, if you look in the storage use case, that's section 5.2. Let me look at the, unfortunately, let me get the link for people. If you look at this use case, you'll note at the bottom the requirements section is filled out. So a mechanism for writing a credential to a website must be specified. If you notice that must is in red, that is special standards language. Both the Internet Engineering Task Force and the W3C use that language to say what mandatory features are and what optional features are. So must means mandatory. That is a mandatory feature. Should is an optional feature. So we could have said a mechanism for writing a credential to a website should be specified, which means that if we don't meet that requirement, then it's okay. We can say that we've been successful. And again, it's a judgment call of the credential, of the CG to determine when it should say must and when it should say should. And there are ramifications to using each word, meaning like musts are very hard and fast rules, and some people might disagree that we should make something a hard and fast rule, whereas shoulds make everything optional, but the problem with making things optional is that at that point you have interoperability concerns, because if one organization implements the optional feature and another organization doesn't implement the optional feature, both organizations can claim that they're completely compliant with the specification, but you still have an interoperability concern there. You don't have interoperability. So you have to be very careful how you pick your musts and shoulds. So anyway, the requirements section there just tells, that's an example of how the requirements are done. Moving on to the next one, if no one has any comments or questions on that. Interactive transmission, we've got two use cases here, interactive transmission and non-interactive transmission. And if you'll remember, this is a design criteria that we had settled on before. So the idea here is that you, the owner of a credential, should be able to be in the loop when somebody requests your credentials. So, for example, if you're signing up to a new website and they require a proof of your email address or proof of, a high school, diploma of some kind, that's an interactive use case. The website asks you for the information. You go to your credential service. You click yes, I want to transmit this, and then you give it to that website. So that's interactive transmission. Non-interactive transmission is if, for example, you went to your primary healthcare provider and they said, we would like to know who your emergency contact is at any point. Can you authorize us to pull that information whenever we need it? So if you say yes to that, then that healthcare provider can non-interactively pull your emergency contact information whenever they need to. That's the Section 5.4 non-interactive transmission use case. Section 5.5, need to know, has to do with not sharing more than you need to, basically sharing the bare minimum you need to get access to a particular service or website. So this would be an example of this would be sharing a proof that you're above the age of 13 to get into a PG-13 movie or rent a PG-13 movie online versus you having to share, for example, your email address and your date of birth, right? That would clearly fall into all kinds of FERPA-like regulation. So the need to know is a way to protect both the sender and the receiver of the data. Any questions on that? Was it not clear on the why that's an important thing to have?
Manu, this is sort of a side point about that. Need to know obviously is fine. When we use examples of kids being 13, somewhere we need to get schooled up in all the differences around the globe about access by minors to anything and minors' ability to say anything. Here in the U.S., we use COPPA, C-O-P-P-A, but that's not an international standard. And so I'm just throwing that in as a little aside comment that as we write use cases and we use underage examples, we probably need to do some schooling up on what that really means internationally or get more voices to respond to it.
Yeah.
But I'm not making a comment about the need to know. That looks very solid. Thanks.
Okay. So maybe what we need to do, we should definitely have an example of a COPPA example in there. Then maybe we should go to some of our European colleagues and ask them what's happening, what kind of regulations exist in the EU and maybe Hong Kong and China as well. So,
sure.
Okay, we should definitely follow up on that. Okay, any other comments on need to know before we move on? Okay, I'm looking at Section 5.6, composability. The idea here is that multiple credentials from multiple issuers should be able to be used together to grant you access to something that requires more than just one credential from one issuer. So, for example, if you want to open a bank account, you usually have to show two valid forms of identification, such as a U.S. passport. It says U.S. password in the spec. That needs to be changed. So, a U.S. passport or a driver's license, and you would have those issued by two completely different organizations, and you would should be able to combine those together in the request. So the requester basically needs to be able to ask for multiple credentials, and you should be able to transmit multiple credentials in one request. So that's the composability use case. Section 5.7, endorsements. So a credential should be able to be endorsed or countersigned by one or more entities. So the signatures should be able to be chained together. So this is one person signing another person's signature, or you should be able to approve multiple signatures on a original document. So this is something like the notary is a bad example, but I'm trying to think of a good. I'm stretching for a good example, but maybe like a marriage credential of some kind, where people, you know, have multiple. You have multiple signatures on there, but it's not clear who signed the document first. Okay, that's endorsements. Section 5.8, pseudo anonymity. We want to make sure that we try and protect people's privacy as much as possible. So it should be able to create a pseudo-anonymous identity and associate a credential like you're above the age of 13 or you're above the age of 18 or 21, and just transmit that without the website being able to understand anything more about you other than the bare minimum necessary there. So we want to support pseudo-anonymity. And then Section 5.9, identity aliases. So the idea here is that, you know, people end up using things like Twitter short names to talk to people. Most systems have this capability in there. So, for example, like GitHub, you can @mention someone to bring them into a conversation. On Twitter, you can @mention a username to bring them in. On Google Plus, you can use plus and the person's name to do the same thing. So this is in there kind of as a side effect of the payments use cases. So people wanted to be able to say, I want to pay Amazon and type out Amazon, and all of the payment information for Amazon, the company, be filled in. So the question here is, how do we create that aliasing mechanism? Okay, that's it for the use cases. Are there any comments or concerns about the use cases? Does anyone feel like we should not have a vote to put this, that we should not have a vote on this document? We shouldn't present it to @Deli3C TPAC as is, that we should make some changes before we do that? Chris, you've got questions, comments?
So, yeah, I typed it out there, but I just wanted to say that from a Badgerland perspective, endorsement is a really loaded term. We have a whole working group specifically around endorsement. So we might submit some extra stuff to add to that use case, if that's okay. But I mean, otherwise, yeah. I think we're in good shape. But we'll maybe take it up offline and send you some more stuff that came out of that working group.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Okay.
If you could send it to the mailing list, Chris, if that's possible, that'd be great, so we can have a discussion about it. The other question to you, Chris, is, would you want that text to be included in the document for the vote? My guess is yes, because you're concerned that there's going to be confusion if we don't have the text in there. I guess what we could do is we could add it in the document, and then people could vote and comment on the text.
Yeah, I think that'd be good if we could get it in before the vote, just because it is such a kind of a big big topic for us.
Okay.
What's the timeline then to get it in before the vote?
Today. We were hoping to start the vote today.
Okay, we can do that.
Okay. So maybe right after the call we can go back and forth a couple of times and get it in there and call for the vote. The vote's going to be called for at 5 p.m. today. Eastern.
Matthew, this is Bill Gebert.
Yep.
I just wanted to make one comment on use case 5.1 in the first example where we use the term the SAT. Actually, the SAT is owned by a company called College Board, so maybe we need to change that to GRE or TOEFL. But
okay.
Shall I follow the same process of putting that into the mail list and submitting that?
No, I can just change it right now. If it's a single, if we're just changing a single word, then let's just do it right now.
Yeah, just some sensitivity with ownership, that's all.
Absolutely. I apologize for getting mixed up there.
No apologies necessary, believe me.
I'm also delighted that you thought of that, Bill, because GRE is definitely an international examination, and it will speak to a lot more people than the SAT. Great call.
Okay. Okay, so change has been made, and it should be making its way to the website at any moment. Okay. Any other questions, concerns, or feedback on the use cases of the design criteria? Okay, so let me go ahead and type out a proposal here. Getting the text together. Okay, so the proposal is to publish a preliminary credentials use case document and vote on publishing it as a first public working draft before W3C TPAC. Let's see. Start the vote at 5 p.m. ET on Tuesday, October 14th, that's today, and keep it open for 7 days. So plus one, minus one, plus zero that. And then for those that are not on IRC, just call out a plus one, minus one, plus zero to vote. Bill, plus one, minus one, plus zero?
Plus one.
Okay. Mark Luba?
Plus one.
Mary?
Plus one, thanks.
Okay. All right, so that's done. I will put together the questionnaire and the vote at the end of the day today. For those that I had mentioned this a couple of weeks ago, the web payments vote basically asked whether or not the person was okay with the publication of the document as it stands, understanding that it's a draft. And then, so it was a simple yes or no vote. Yes, the document should be published. No, it shouldn't. And then there are a whole bunch of optional follow-up questions on every single design criterion use case saying, do you feel that this is a good use case? Are there any concerns you have about it? What would you want to see changed? Is that the format that everyone would like to follow for this? It worked out fairly well for the web payments use case vote, so that's why I'm suggesting that we use the same kind of format for this vote.
Mark's happy with it.
Sure. No objections.
Okay. Okay, so we'll go ahead and put that questionnaire out. I'll work on it today and get it out by 5 p.m. today. Okay, great. Fantastic. That is all good news. Moving ahead. Okay, the last item on the agenda, we've got 7 minutes. We weren't expected to get deeply into this, but we need to start discussing a roadmap document as well to at least – plot out what we think needs to be finished for this stuff to hit an official world standard bar. And that means things like you have to have the spec done, the design work needs to be done, you have to have multiple interoperable implementations, you have to have a test suite, you have to have public review. There's a lot of stuff that goes into each one of these specifications. So we have to propose a timeline to W3C, and that timeline absolutely cannot be more than 3 to 4 years, right? Because that means that we're biting off way more than we can chew. It's fine to propose a bunch of things happening in parallel, and so the more of this stuff that we can parallelize, the better off we are. Let me put up a roadmap just based on the technology stack that we have today that's being used. Again, this is a very drafty document. It is just a proposal. We can change absolutely everything in it. But just putting this down there as an example of, you know, the type of technology that we could use to achieve the use cases that we've listed. So the document's broken up into three sections: very brief introduction, a description of the technology stack, right? And right now we're doing the, you know, JSON-LD, secure messaging, identity credentials technology stack. We could certainly pull other technology stack bits into here. Like, for example, the vocabulary stuff is just completely undefined here, and I think that's something that we're really heavily going to lean on Badge Alliance to provide. You know, what's the terminology that we're using? What constitutes an education credential? Things of that nature. So that's an example of something that's missing from the document that needs to be put in there. But I didn't want to do it without having a fairly in-depth discussion with Badge Alliance about, you know, what's going to be put into this. I didn't want to sign Badge Alliance up for work that they hadn't agreed to, basically. So section two is technology stack. Section three is timeline, which is very sparse. We'll go back in and fill out where we think the specs are, how many implementations we have for the specs, whether or not there's a test suite, how much time we think each thing is going to take, things of that nature. And then the active collaborators is on the bottom, all the way down there. Again, you know, we've got the Web Payments and Credentials Group, we've got the Internet Governance Forum, we've got the U.S. Fed. Again, Badge Alliance is not on there because I didn't want to sign you guys up for stuff that, you know, you didn't feel comfortable with. But if you want me to put you on there, please let us know, and we'll get you on there. Same thing with some of the other organizations on this call. We don't put people in these documents until they ask to be put in them. Okay, so there's the and that's it. I mean, the roadmap is basically what technologies are we using, brief overview. When do we think we're going to be able to be finished with each one of the technologies, and how is that development timeline interlocked with one another, and who's going to be actively collaborating? And then Chris is saying, yes, please list the Badge Alliance in the active collaborator section. So I will add you to that right after the call. Thanks. Okay. So this is a high-level roadmap. We can change it, modify it, however people feel I didn't think that we would present this roadmap as anything official to W3C TPAC, because quite literally the document was created yesterday, so I think people need time to digest it and give feedback on it. But that being said, please give feedback on it. You know, if there are technologies that are not on here that should be on here, we need to get them on here. If there are organizations that are not on here that are going to be active collaborators on this, we need to get them in here. Okay. Any questions on the roadmap? Concerns? Or questions about why we're doing a roadmap document in the first place? Okay. If there are none, we'll go ahead and end the call. Please definitely review the document. So I think the thing that we're going to want in the next week or two is for a couple of people on this call to volunteer to review the documents, go through with a fine-tooth comb, and send feedback to the public mailing list on things that you found, things that need to be changed. It can be grammar issues, typos, sections reworded, new use cases, you know, new technologies we should be looking at. But I think at this point we at least have two documents that we can start doing public review of in the group. That's also a signal for you to take it to your colleagues and have them review it as well and give us public feedback on them as well. Okay. Any other questions or concerns before for the rest of the week? We'll meet again next week before TPAC to finalize things. Any concerns about any of the stuff we discussed today? Okay, if they're not, thank you. Okay, sorry, Mary, go ahead.
I was just going to say no concerns, but thanks for laying everything out. It looks like we really covered a lot today. Appreciate it. Yep.
Okay, thanks everyone for the call, and we'll meet again next week. In the meantime, if you can do reviews and send the mailing list, that'd be great, of these two documents. Thanks all. Bye.
Thank you.
Bye.